Okay, so recording, and basically I wanted to actually play Divinity today, but I knew the second that we'd get on the game, we'd end up talking about stuff because we haven't done this in a while.
I think that's how it happens, yeah. If we haven't got it out of our system, yeah.
Mm. Also, fair note, right? So, yeah, I was talking to Ozone about the idea of doing a Spaceballs for a Space Virgins. Got to run it past Hamish, obviously, but I'm sure it'd be fine. If I bring up the chat during this episode, we can see me and you trashing Spaceballs. So I want to get out in front of that as well. So,
I mean, I'm very happy to have Ozone on, but it is just going to be, I can't remember how Hamish, but I don't think Hamish was a particular fan either, right? You kind of hate it. I kind of hate it. I don't know if that's going to be fun for Ozone, but if he's cool with that, then.
I've got a confession about this.
Yeah.
I've only seen the film once.
Yeah.
And the last third of it I watched at 1.5 speed.
I think I've seen it a few times. Like, I watched it, you know, it would be on TV occasionally as a kid in the 80s. And even as a kid, I've got to say, even as a kid, it was kind of, at most, it was kind of like, you know, it's kind of like, it's the similar kind of humor in like Airplane or Top Secret or, you know, films like that, but just not anywhere near as good as, you know, smart or.
It's just silly.
Like, we're combing. What's the joke with we're combing the area, and then it's just a giant comb.
Yeah,
it's kind of like. But that's it, you know.
Yeah.
And the Spaceball, the Star Wars theming, you know, like Chewbacca as a dog, funny idea, but it's beating a dead horse. Like, it's just, yeah, everything's nailed into it. Like Airplane, it makes its joke and it moves on.
Yeah,
it's like rapid, like. Whereas this is just beating the same fucking joke into the ground.
Yeah. And the jokes take longer as well. That opening scene where the ship just goes on and on and on. And it's like, what kind of is the joke here? That it's a big ship?
I think that's one of the better jokes. Because it's directly, you know, in the opening shot of the first Star Wars is this, you know, the enormous Star Destroyer and then the tiny little rebel ship. And that does something. The cinematography there is clever, you know.
Yes.
it's domination versus blah blah and big versus small.
Yeah.
And it's aping that. That's a fairly funny joke, just making that go on forever. But I do like that kind of humor, just things going on forever, like to an uncomfortable level. I do sort of enjoy.
Yeah, it went to that uncomfortable level and then it went further and it's just like, right. is this just padding?
You know, I like on cinema at the cinema, the Tim Heidecker thing where it's like, a little bit what we do, but like they're taking the piss. Like it's people doing a film show that really shouldn't be doing a film show. They don't have the temperament or knowledge or anything. And there's one I was watching it the other day, and there's one where they're talking about interviewing, I can't remember, one of the Estevez actors. They talk about interviewing him, and he says he's known for such films as, and he reads out like three or four films, and you're like, okay, is that, you know, stop that. He doesn't stop. He carries on. He reads every single film, and this dude's been in like every B movie for the last 20 years. So he reads out a list of films that goes on for a solid 3 minutes, and that's taking it like way too far. But I love it.
But also as well, like, it's parody without saying anything as well with Mel Brooks.
It's parodying a form.
Yeah,
The Star Wars movies as a form, which is
I like,
to be clear, like we talked about this a little bit earlier in text, but I would say, you know, I'm a fan of Mel Brooks, but I like Blazing, I think Blazing Saddles is
a really good film. I will give you excellent. Blazing Saddles.
Producers, excellent, very clever, very funny.
Yeah.
And Young Frankenstein.
I haven't seen Young Frankenstein.
That's another one. That one's a spoof, but I think it's a more successful spoof, parody, whatever. But after that, as I say, when I was young, I liked The History of the World Part 1, but I've not seen that since.
I've not seen that.
So I don't know. Don't know if that holds up still.
No. And I mean, you'll give Men in Tights a little bit more leeway as well.
No, what I was saying there is I hate Men in Tights slightly less than I hate Spaceballs. It has a story, kind of.
Yeah. See, and also the trouble is, right, and I think this might be worthy of like full discussion with Ozone. And I need to get around to doing this because I always say I'm going to do a PG edit of the Star Wars porno because it's quite amusing, but obviously you know, it's and you know, the, I don't even think the porn in it is that bad. And they,
What do you mean by bad?
Well, it's like it's your standard Brazzers vanilla, you know, porn.
Like not extreme. Like, you mean?
No, yeah, like it's not weird or extreme or anything. They're wearing the alien costumes and stuff, but like it's very middle of the road. So, but like I'd like to fade in, fade out those bits, and then just have what is essentially a beat for beat recreation of A New Hope or Star Wars, as you call it. And it's funnier than Spaceballs, much funnier than Spaceballs. like Obi-Wan Kenobi, like in the porno, Obi-Wan Kenobi is just, you know, he's a tired old guy that lives in the desert and he fucks sand people to pass the time. Like,
yeah, okay. Do they? I assume it's they must do like a lightsaber penis joke.
Pretty sure they do. Yeah, it's all sorts.
Or like somebody gets an erection and a, like noise, like something like. Surely you got to do that.
I think sort of. Yeah, they do. Oh, Darth Vader's got. I'm not sure if Darth Vader's dick is real. Like he's got like it's a big black prosthetic or something.
Right, right.
The stormtroopers are all like sexy ladies. Two of them have a go on Chewbacca, which is good. But he stays in costume. I love it. It's just
Is that bestiality?
Is it bestiality if like I mean yes, but with consent. I can't actually remember. These are stormtroopers and Chewbacca, so I don't.
I mean, how in terms of it being or not being bestiality, like because Chewbacca is another sentient species, a humanoid sentient species, which just happens to look like a dog.
Yeah.
So how close to like is it bestiality with a dwarf or an elf?
I mean, yes, but it's okay. Maybe is that the answer? Like, okay. Bestiality is wrong because it's like there's a consent issue, right?
Is it bestiality when it's any species that isn't human. So if you meet aliens,
yeah, that's what I'm. That's, like,
yeah,
yeah.
I don't think that's right.
With
Chewbacca, I would say yes, that's bestiality because he looks like a dog. I think it's just visual.
I'm thinking that might even be an offensive term because you are effectively calling them beasts, right? Bestiality?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, that is the, yeah.
But, etymology.
It probably comes from the Greeks that we're making a distinction between us humans and the beasts, whereas, you know, we're all beasts, we're all animals.
Yeah, yeah. Interspecies erotica? No, that's from Clerks 2. but I don't know. But I mean, to be honest, Chewbacca seems to enjoy it.
So. Good. Yeah, yeah. Never liked Chewbacca.
No, not really. No, he doesn't really do a lot, does he?
Well, he's a bit toxic.
As in, like, he's just, violent?
Like, let me win the game or I'll rip your arms off. That's not okay. Like, I remember as a kid, that pissed me off. I was like, no, fuck yourself. I'll win the fucking game. Fuck you.
Yeah, I suppose so. But that's part of the funny relationship that Chewbacca has with C-3PO. That they start off a bit like that, and then on Cloud City, where Chewbacca basically
carrying on his back.
Yeah. So I love C-3PO. He's the best.
He likes no. Incredibly annoying.
Yeah,
I mean, he's supposed to be annoying. But Anthony Daniels is like equally annoying.
Oh, I guess that's good casting then, right?
Or no acting.
Like, yeah.
If you watch an Anthony Daniels interview, like he thinks he's the crux of the whole thing. He thinks like he's the most important character in Star Wars. It's kind of adorable.
He is important.
No, it's not. For what? He didn't do anything.
He's in six.
He's in them all. He's in them all. But
okay, first of all, like him and R2 are like they're a couple.
I don't know if they're a couple or it's more like R2's his captive.
No,
he annoys R2.
They annoy each other. They're like a married couple.
I mean, first of all, R2 does things plot wise, right? He does things that without which they wouldn't have won. C-3PO does nothing at any point of any use, apart from annoy people, and he's a hindrance if anything.
He translates.
You just translate. Yeah, that's fair.
And also, okay. But you're not going to count this because it's in Rise of Skywalker, but his memory saves the day with the dagger.
Yeah, like, fuck off. Don't you even... Like, I think I've seen that film twice, and I'm going to fuck... I couldn't tell you anything that happens in it. How do you remember that?
I actually didn't hate that film.
It's completely incoherent.
The trilogy itself is incoherent, and that disappoints me because it could have been really good. Like, I liked Adam Driver in it.
I'm not sure it could.
Yeah, no, it could.
I think Star Wars might be an inherently, if you want to keep it true to what we think of as Star Wars, because Andor's great.
Yeah,
but Andor obviously is a completely different tack. Like, it's not. It's not really Star Wars in the sense that it doesn't, you know, it's not an adventure for children.
Fair, yeah.
If you're going to make Star Wars that is Star Wars in that sense, I'm not sure there's enough room in the Star Wars universe to tell that many stories. Or at least they hinder their ability to tell interesting stories by keep bringing it back to, like, the Skywalkers, Jedi, yes, lights, like, all that shit. Like, do something more interesting.
What I was hoping out of the trilogy was that they were going to sort of put that to bed. They were going to be like, you know what? Skywalkers don't need to be the center of it. But they kept umming and ahhing about it. They teased it.
Yeah.
And then they U-turned on it. And I think if they didn't U-turn on it,
even the Jedi, they could have, like, which, this, you know, there were sort of hints of this in the first one. I think the first one kind of left a lot of threads intentionally open so that whoever took it over could take it in various ways. But I like the idea of, like, the Jedi's just being gone.
Yeah.
Which was the only interesting thing in the second film, which was, I think the second film's probably the worst. The idea that the Jedi had been gone, you know, which was, it just was one interpretation of the, you know, the Force, what is the Force and how should the Force, blah, blah, blah. Because the Jedi were fucking evil.
Yeah.
Like, it's good that they're gone. So, like, they're them being, you know, it's like the, I don't really think of a historical example, but, you know, say the Roman Empire fell and took the Catholic Church with it.
Yeah.
Then you'd have, like, lots of new interpretations of how do we do spirituality without this, you know, big, overarching, authoritarian kind of thing. And that'd be, you know, like, you'd get a little bit in Rogue One with the sort of the Force-using monk who's not a Jedi.
Oh, yeah, he's not, yeah. And you get that in some of the games and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, I get games for sure. I'm sure it's in the books, but, yeah.
Mm.
I don't know. I think with Star Wars, just either do something interesting with it or just leave it the fuck alone. Stop making this drivel with it.
Yeah, I think it could be saved. Not so much saved, but, like, sufficiently compartmentalized so you can go, well, that bit's crap, that bit's better, that bit's a laugh.
I think it could. I don't think the people making that kind of media now, like, I don't think today's media production people are capable of doing it well, because they even, like, Star Trek, the recent Star Trek shows are horrible, and I think Star Trek's a lot harder to fuck up. Like, Star Trek is very formulaic. You just have to follow the formula. It's, you know, it's very obvious what makes Star Trek Star Trek and what people enjoy in Star Trek.
Yeah.
And they can't bring themselves to make that. I think since Game of Thrones, anytime anything with any budget is made, they want everybody to watch it.
Yeah.
As was the case with, you know, in Game of Thrones, you know, hyperbolically, like, everybody watched Game of Thrones.
Mm.
But that's like a once in a several generations kind of phenomenon where you get, especially now.
Yeah. Last time was MASH.
Well, yeah.
Which I never really, bit before my time.
Yeah, but they rather than making a Star Trek for the Star Trek audience, they want to make a Star Trek with mass appeal, which means they end up making something that nobody likes.
I think
it's similar with the Star Wars, I think.
Yeah. Although saying that, like, I can understand that your mainstream, I mean, what is, to be honest, Star Wars has been going for so long now. I think the audience changes a lot over time. Like, we are older than people younger than us. That statement means nothing, doesn't it? But what I mean is, like, kids like a lot of the stuff about Star Wars that we really don't like. And I like, and I probably like a lot of stuff about Star Wars that you don't like. And I think some of that is, some of it's like age, some of it's like what's coming out when you're, I don't know, developing your tastes and stuff like that. I think when it comes to Star Wars, I don't care about the quality as much.
What do you mean by quality?
I don't know. I feel like my expectations are a lot lower. So, for example, I like most of the Star Wars stuff that comes out.
I would say, just very briefly, my problem with Star Trek isn't that it's not. I think it's like the first three Star Trek films are like very simple. Like, they're not complicated. They're not particularly clever. It's just a space adventure cowboy.
Did you say Star Wars? Did you say Star Trek when you meant Star Wars?
I might have done. Yeah, I'm talking about Star Wars right now.
Yes, you said Star Trek. So
okay, that's going to happen a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
The first three Star Wars films, very simple, like just like adventure films. For the films, don't overcomplicate it. Just keep. Mm. Don't try and be clever. Don't try and be, you know, like just keep just an action romp. Characters we like doing action romp. That's what you've got to do. It's not hard.
Well, doesn't that contradict what you say was like, if you're not going to do something new, don't bother?
Well, no, it's, by new, I mean, get rid of the Jedi, get rid of all that shit. Shed all that, like, but keep it, just, you do the same thing in terms of, you know, young hero, blah, 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 which they almost went with Rey. They just didn't sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
They made her too complicated, and is she a Skywalker? Like, I don't, who fucking gives a shit? I'm the generation who should give a shit about that, and I'm sick of that. Give me something to do.
Yeah, I'd be not a Skywalker. I would have been happier with her not being, well, was she even a Skywalker? She was Palpatine.
She was
a Palpatine, but then she
sort of... Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
Sorry, I'm getting text messages. Da, 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 da. Oh, right. They could have so easily, like... sort of not done that, but what I did like some of the directing. I did like some of the big old ships fading away in the dust, and
which one?
Rise of Skywalker in particular, but even the trilogy.
The middle one is
forgettable,
a failure in every regard. That's embarrassing. I think the first one is the one that feels most Star Warsy, but it's also the one doing the least.
Yeah,
interesting. Which is fine for the. I don't know. I can't. Yeah, I find them hard to, because they're not a coherent trilogy, which makes it
no.
Every, that's the each that's, time director's yeah. just retconning everything that happened in the previous film, and you can't make a series like that.
Yeah,
you can't make Star Wars like that. That's things you could make. Like.
It's well, I mean, they retcon a lot of stuff in the original trilogy. If you think about it,
not
would Luke and Leia have kissed if they'd have already worked out that they were brother and sister?
Yeah, no, so, yeah, for sure. But I mean, retconning just like. The fundamental nature of what this thing is, you know, like that's details. That's fine. They had an idea, and it's fine.
Well, then they do that with the prequels, then, because like they don't really know what the Jedi are when Alec Guinness is just a guy in the desert, and then suddenly it's holding up a Republic.
Well, that's one of the things I hate about Star Wars is like Alec Guinness was wearing brown robes because he lived in a fucking desert.
Mm.
But then, because he's the only Jedi we've seen, that's what Jedi wear. So now all Jedi wear brown fucking robes like they're living in the desert. Like, it's that kind of dumbness really irritates me about Star Wars.
Well, that's why... No, you said Star Wars, I'm pretty sure. That's what I quite liked about the one that was set like quite a long time ago with the twins. Acolyte. Because the Jedi were different, you know, they had a different sort of role in society. They had different outfits. Their lightsabers were a lot more old fashioned. You know, they were clunkier. And I honestly like I feel like sometimes I'm the only one that really enjoyed that, because I think they were doing new stuff with it.
That one sounds interesting. I watched the first episode. I didn't dislike it. I just didn't carry on.
They do interesting things with the Sith. You know, like. Oh, are they really just the bad guys, or are they just doing things that?
And again, I'm a bit tired of the, you know, the Sith. It's a bit too mythologized now as well. And this is mostly not the films. Like, there's very little in the films. Like most of the, and that's a problem with making Star Wars films now, is there's so much secondary media. You know, the books, the games, and everything, fucking cartoons and shit. Like that, you're just starting from a more. You can't really just make stuff up. That was kind of the beauty of the first three films, is they were just making shit up. They knew the universe they were working in, and they were just making stuff up. Now it's so constrained by all this like incredibly complex and boring lore.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty easy going on. They can just not treat the stories almost as separate.
I mean, Disney said that like all of the secondary media stuff is not canon, which I thought was a smart move.
Yeah,
but then they kind of make a lot of it. They bring a lot of it in.
So yeah,
you've got to.
Also, there's like intergalactic stuff, because you don't really, there's not much intergalactic stuff in Star Wars. So what they've done in the this is Ahsoka, actually. Sorry, I don't know if you've seen Ahsoka. Parts of it take place in a different galaxy. So they get...
That they're traveling to?
They travel. Someone, I'm not going to say who, has been...
They have intergalactic travel in the Star Wars universe?
Kind of, but for some reason... no one really does. Well, yeah, they do, basically, yeah. It's not as commonly used. It's very, you know.
Right. Okay.
But, one particular character is exiled in Star Wars to this foreign galaxy, and it's interesting, you know, and they add in a lot of stuff there. So, bits of... the thing is about Ahsoka, right, is that, like, bits of it are boring. It has boring stretches, but it also has some of the most interesting new stuff that they throw in, like a Jedi who doesn't use a lightsaber. That's kind of interesting.
I mean, I do, yeah. Yeah, that's another thing where you've got all these diverse aliens with different body types and sizes and all kinds of stuff. Mm. Like a meter or two long sword is not going to suit everybody.
No.
I mean, in the prequels, like Yoda using a lightsaber looked fucking absurd.
Yeah, and it was a little one.
He's got to leap around like a cartoon to do anything.
Yeah,
like.
that to be honest, would have been better if he just had force. You just, you know.
Yeah, he's a Jedi wizard. Yeah, you got your Jedi wizards, your Jedi knights, your Jedi, you know, like, yeah. Like, which they kind of, but they all just end up using fucking lightsabers. Apart from when you get like a Darth Maul, who's obviously not a Jedi, obviously, but he's, you know, a staff, essentially. At least it's a little bit interesting.
A little bit interesting, except, of course, in real life, if that was ever a weapon, it'd be terrible.
I wouldn't want to train with it.
No. It doesn't seem in any way, like, sensible, usable.
Staffs are,
but the benefit of a staff is you can, like, change your leverage and stuff.
Yeah,
but you've only got that bit where you just do you've got a paddle, you know.
I did wonder about like a lightsaber spear, so it's just it's mostly handled, then just like a little bit on the end,
Or
lightsaber daggers,
yeah, yeah.
That's That'd what Yoda cool. could have had, a couple of lightsaber daggers, he just runs up and stabs your ankles,
cuts you. Hey, you cut your enemy off at the ankles, they're done. Like, what are you gonna do? You can't run on those nubs when you've just had your feet cut off.
What would be the stupidest lightsaber weapon?
In The Acolyte, there is a lightsaber whip.
That's pretty stupid. I mean, they have those in Star Trek, TNG, but that's pretty stupid.
I can't remember how it works, but it's like it's stiff, and then you can turn it into a whip.
That's very stupid.
Do you know, actually...
With how it's presented, but on face value, I hate that.
To be honest, it's only brought out like once, and it's just shown as like, oh, that's a thing. And then they move on.
There was a bit of the Indian film, but Bashiro Mastani, I think it's called, which is it's like a telling of, it's got song and dance in it, obviously, but it's a telling of this historical. I think it's a thing in Indian history where a Muslim princess married a Hindu prince, something like that. So it's like Indian Romeo and Juliet, historical Romeo and Juliet. Anyway. There's somebody in that who has a very long, flexible sword.
Okay.
Like a sword that's like, you know, like a tape measure that's like...
Oh, yeah,
it's got
a
long, flexible sword that's like almost like a sword whip. Oh, okay, that's fucking stupid. It's like, that can't be real, can it? And I checked and, you know, apparently that was a real thing at one point. Like, people used weapons like that. A sword that's also essentially, it's like slow, flexible. You're almost using it as a whip, which is... That sounds like... Far more chance you're going to kill yourself than anybody else.
Were nunchucks ever a real weapon? Because they do not look...
Well, I know that they were... Yeah, so...
They're derived from, like, rice chuckers or something, aren't they?
Threshing, farming. I mean, a lot of weapons are, at least, you know, the mass weapons are derived from, peasants' tools.
Well, that's because, metal smithing is a expensive project. You can't just give swords to a peasant.
Swords around, Of course, you've got to train with a sword to be good with it, whereas a staff or a spear, you need far less training to be as effective.
Yeah, yeah.
But, so I think maybe like the actual threshing tool, long handle, chain, and then a wavy bit, maybe in a pitch battle, but like the actual, the shorter two-handed like kung fu one, I genuinely don't know whether that's a... It doesn't seem like a very effective weapon.
Honestly, what feels like a decently effective weapon that's cheap to produce and easy to use is a baseball bat.
I watched
with a nail in it, maybe.
years ago, I watched a video that was like, what is the best weapon for a zombie apocalypse? And they I knew that their conclusion was baseball bat, and I was like, that's not right. I don't agree with that. It's one of those where I watched the video and they talked me around. Like, by the end of the video, I was like, yeah, 100% that is the best. They said like a metal baseball bat, because it's like, it's very hard to damage, very easy to clean, not a lot of effort to use, you know, not super heavy to swing around.
Oh, they're quite light. They can be quite light. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what like contamination issues you got to deal with, but metal's probably more hygienic, right? And also,
well, a wood bat, right? And a wood bat, yeah, you've got to, cleaning it would be harder, yeah.
But also, as well, is that like a blunt weapon, you're probably less likely to like have blood go everywhere. Like, there's going to be some blood.
Yeah, I think they may have mentioned that. And also, you don't, you know, with obviously with an axe or a sword, you've got to worry about facing. You know, you can be hit and.
And axes are like they're pretty hafted, aren't they? You know, like,
well, I think we've been a bit contaminated by video games and movies in terms of what we think of as like an axe that was used in war.
Mm. Because they're long, you know, and small at the end, yeah.
Games, it's like an enormous fucking two-sided. Whereas the actual, yeah, like the Danish axe was like a very long haft.
Mm.
Almost spear length haft with like a head that's like this big.
Yeah, like a crowbill type thing, yeah. Or, yeah. Oh, what am I thinking of? That's, oh, is it a crowbill or something? Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean, though. Yeah, like something that's faster to swing around.
Which is a very effective weapon, because all of the weight is at the end, unlike a sword, all of the weight is in the end, so it's quite wieldy.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get some swing on that. The bit that does the damage is the only bit that's hitting the button. Yeah. You want to go up against armor, that's a good weapon to use.
Yeah. I mean, spears, of course, are probably the most common weapon, because they're relatively cheap, because all you need is the metal tip, and then you've just got wood.
Which is sharp wood in a lot of cases.
Sharp wood.
If you're not well armored, sharp wood's going to do some damage.
Yeah. And it gives you distance as well, which is because reach, you know, like you don't.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of war.
No.
I'm a big fan of spears. Like, I think spear is. Like, if I've got to fight somebody and I've got a choice of weapon, I want distance and I want to not have to have too much skill to use it. And a spear, you know, you can use it kind of like a staff and you can just do that.
You know? Yeah, mine would probably be spear, staff, club, you know, something. Not axe. No. I think axe is just, oh, wait. Because the thing, one of the sort of ideas I like in fantasy, the fantasy world, is the idea of a character not having a weapon. Like, I guess. In the fantasy, medieval fantasy world, in video games and stuff like that, weapons are like a big part of it. Like your Morrowinds, your Oblivions, all that kind of stuff. And I like the idea of unarmed characters, so, you know, in this world, right? So, you know, I like the idea of perhaps a character that where their primary weapon is just a tool that they happen to use. It's not like a dedicated weapon, like a sword or a spear, but it's just something like a walking stick or...
I enjoy that. Yeah.
I suppose an axe as well, you know, something like that. It's just like, well, the axe is primarily used for chopping wood and making fires, you know?
That's definitely a bit of a trope in fantasy books where you've got, like, older characters, not wizards, obviously. Wizards always have staffs, but just some old dude with, like, the walking staff. It's really, you know, it's really actually very good at, you know, using it as a fact. Like, I enjoy that. It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I just find it a little bit unlikely that everyone just happens to have a sword on them everywhere they go, just everywhere.
Well, I mean, swords were very rare. Like, even amongst professional fighting people, swords, it was mostly spears. Yeah. And swords were off, you know, in many cultures, like a status symbol. So as a peasant, in many places, you wouldn't have been allowed to wear a sword.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, spears have greater reach than a sword. So even... But the issue with a spear is carrying it around. It's a big thing to carry around, and you can't conceal it.
Yeah, certainly can't conceal it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, on your shoulder? I mean, is it going to have a strap?
No, I think you would just sort of carry it like this, just like leaning on your shoulder. All the weight's on your shoulder. Like, it's not...
Yeah, but like, what, are you going to walk 20 miles like that?
Yeah, I mean, they did. They walked.
I suppose they're not super heavy. I mean, how? I don't even
know. Well, it's heavy, but because it's essentially a lever. Like, if you're holding, just all you're doing it here is keeping the balance and the weight's on your shoulder, which I think is relatively, I'm not saying super comfortable, but relatively comfortable.
They pop a bindle on the end.
Say, hang on, you want to fight? Let me take a bindle off.
But that's the thing, isn't it? Like, yeah, but if you're just a traveller, if you have nothing to do with war, you're just a travelling cobbler or something, then you're not going to carry a spear. That's way too much faff.
Well, I think I would like I didn't used to like the idea, but like an Irish like shillelagh, which can sort of be a walking stick. Like mm-hmm. looks a lot like a, essentially, but just like a, you know, it's shorter than a staff. It's mm. it's a bit taller than our walking sticks, but yeah, with a big fucking heavy lump on the.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Look,
and then just like it's a club essentially. Like, that's not bad.
Yeah, no, that's not too bad. Yeah, yeah. I actually, one of these things that I actually have a weird knack for is whips. I can do a whip, and I can really? Yeah, and I can make it just lick the target.
You could be in an Old West show.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, it's just something. I don't know how I learned it or.
That's another one that I've wondered. Like, were whips ever used as like real weapons, like a combat weapon?
I can't imagine. Oh well,
I can think maybe like rapier in one hand, because you know the old cloak, like cloak and dagger, like mm. cloak in one hand, dagger, and you use the cloak to sort of like tangle up their weapon and then stab yeah. them, kind of thing. See that sort of use, like a whip to sort of tangle them up, and then. But it seems you need a lot of practice to make that worthwhile.
Is it a weapon of like you're scaring people with it rather than actually hurting them with it?
I mean, maybe it's more like, because I think whips were used in the context of like herding livestock, mm. right? The whip crack to just mm. make the cattle move or whatever, or tap on the ass. Yeah. So maybe it was just like, it was more of a weapon of happenstance. You know, if you got attacked, you got the whip in your hand, you're like, hey, fuck off.
Yeah, that's probably the most logical. Seem a
very effective weapon. Because yo-yos as well, like yo-yos were a weapon in, I think, in India, possibly China or something.
Well, I mean, if you ever hit yourself in the face with them, you'd, yeah, they are.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's another one where, like, the amount of... Oh, I saw a video. It was some, like, Chinese kung fu practitioner, and she had, like, a tiny little, like, pointy blade, like a tiny little dagger on a string, and she was just, like, flinging it around and then pulling, like, really, you know, because it's, like, high-level kung fu, like, really flowing and stuff, just, like, pulling it back and throwing it and pulling it back, and that was kind of amazing.
Yeah, that sounds very dangerous.
Again, how do you? It's one of those like how do you get to that point? How do you train that without dying. Severely injuring yourself?
Well, I guess without a knife to begin with. Just,
yeah, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Because yeah.
underrated weapon, slings. I've watched a fair amount of sling-based YouTube content, and slings can get really fucking deadly. Like, and you can do crazy things. Like they were talking about. Because first of all, you can have like quite light slings that are quite short, and you can get to like really long slings. You know, they really like, you know, war slings where they're whooshing them. And like the rocks are like this size that they're throwing. Mm. And they were talking about if you're against a mass formation of people using shields, you can sling the stone such that it bounces on the ground and hits their ankles.
Oh my god!
It sounds horrible.
Oh man, I've never even thought of slings.
You should watch some YouTube videos with slings, like, because obviously it's something that's not widely practiced anymore, so we don't really, it's one of those things that requires a lot of practice, so we don't really, all we've got is the ancient account, so we don't actually know how good people could be with a sling. But these people in a modern context who are practicing it are getting really, really good, like very, very accurate over a very long distance and stuff.
That's amazing, because a sling is really just such a basic weapon. It's the most basic projectile weapon.
Yeah, yeah, seeing off wolves and stuff.
God, see, in a zombie apocalypse, a slingman is an excellent person to have on your team because they can make a sling out of a lot of things, I'm imagining, and you can hunt quite effectively.
Readily available.
Yeah.
We just need roundish stones.
And then you can hunt, and, you know, yeah.
Oh, friend of the show, Danny, made me watch. You know, there's a plethora of these survival TV shows now, Stick People in the Wilderness, They've Got to Survive kind of thing. It was people in, it doesn't really matter, but the far north of America, so it gets, you know, where it gets very cold, and they were had to survive. And it was a bunch of people, and it was just who survives the longest, just on whatever they can hunt and forage.
And were these survivalists, or were they just like regular folks?
Regular people who had an interest, had an interest in that kind of thing. But one was just a dude who lived in Labrador, which I think is in Canada, who his dad just sort of, I get the sense that he was like, lived very remotely. Didn't really have much contact with, you know, our civilization. And he was doing this thing. He was hunting like grouses and partridges and stuff like that, but with a very long stick with a noose on the end.
Okay, yeah, I've seen that.
And I was like, that's not going to fuck it. You can't sneak up on a bird put a noose around its neck and pull a thing and catch it. Like, that's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, you can.
And he was, like, by far the most successful hunter. It was just walking up to these birds. The bird doesn't give a shit. I guess their vision, you know. But yeah, the bird wouldn't get it. Just put this thing around the neck and go, boop, yep, there's another bird. Amazing.
Yeah. To be honest, I miss the old. I used to watch the old Ray Mears Survival in the Wild stuff.
I used to enjoy Ray Mears. Yeah.
Because he had this thing where it was less like masculine, right? Like it wasn't like Bear Grylls or SAS. Yeah. You know, what's his name? Dick Ryan in the Wild.
He seemed like more interested in like nature.
And yeah, like, and it's like, well, the thing is, he got into outdoorsman stuff because he couldn't. He couldn't afford to go on holiday, so he wanted a trip away. I'm just going to,
yeah.
And I always felt like he had that little vibe that carried through with him. It's just like, yeah, it's a nice little holiday, you know, you know, it's not survival. It's just, you know, and I think the most,
like you say, a lot of those people are, it's hyper masculine, like almost like, it's not really foraging and living off the land. It's like how to be a paramilitary. It's like how to be a military contractor. It's like, it leans that way. And
Yeah, it can sometimes get a bit like, yeah, a bit icky in that regard, and a bit, that type of person as well, you know, yeah. Mm. Which, although I think I read a Ray Mears book once, and it, if I remember correctly, it was like a really rose-tinted book about colonization, which I think was a bit like... Oh, these explorers, they went around all the country, you know, expanding the world.
I've got to say, like, I was thinking about this the other day, like, during my childhood, that's how it was presented. It wasn't problematized at all. It was like, you know, these brave explorers who went and found these new lands with all these resources and stuff, like, and Christopher Columbus, you know, like what a hero. I mean, have you actually, I don't mention this before, but, like, I actually read into, like, Christopher Columbus's, like, first voyages and stuff, and it was brutal. Far beyond my expectations. Like they were just doing genocides for like the sake of it and stuff.
Wow, that doesn't even sound like it's got a useful purpose to it.
No, I mean, they would go to, I think, because they ended up in the Caribbean first before they got to mainland America, and they would just like essentially try and enslave everybody, and if they couldn't, just kill them all.
Oh wow!
Just everybody they met, it's like slave or dead, which you want.
Wow.
It was like, oh, yeah.
That's, yeah. I mean, that's not surprising, but yeah, it's just.
Yeah, I didn't know it was that. I thought Christopher Columbus was just the first to go over there. Like, found America, cool, there it is, everybody. Came back. That was my understanding of Christopher Columbus. Then everybody else went and did all the brutality. But no, it was brutal from the first.
Yeah.
It was fucking brutal.
Yeah, yeah. And also, there were people there as early as the Vikings, I believe.
Yeah.
And also, was America originally populated because there was an ice bridge long, long, long ago?
I don't know if it was ice or land, because there were periods of, well, not periods, there were punctuated instances of migration from Asia into America via, you know, Siberia through what's now Alaska kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it was ice or land or both or...
Yeah,
I think starting like 50,000 years ago. I think there's one like 50,000 years ago, and then a big migration like 30,000 years ago.
It's really not that much of a big span of water if you think about it. It's a bit cold.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, I think
50
it's
miles.
Relatively narrow. Yeah, and it does freeze over, yeah. Yeah.
So it's, yeah. Do you know, it took me an embarrassingly long time to actually work out, because of our maps, that Russia and Alaska were really just next door neighbors.
Literally next to each other.
No, they're opposite sides of the map.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. I didn't realize till the other day that Alaska has a little bit that comes all the way down the western coast of the landmass. Like it almost touches the contiguous USA. I didn't realize that.
There's a bit of trivia that I was told, and I'm probably going to misremember this and get this wrong. But it's something like the lowest point of Alaska is more south than the highest point of California, or something like that.
That can't possibly.
Can it possibly be true?
California is literally south of.
Well, it's the thing.
I'll put the kettle on while
we go. Yeah, lowest point of Alaska. Right, lowest point. The lowest point of Alaska is at sea level along the Pacific Ocean. No, not the lowest. Oh, lowest. Right, southernmost. Right. Let's get this. Southernmost point of Alaska, right. It's located on Matignac Island. Sorry, I've probably done an awful job at pronouncing that. longitude, okay, so let's have a look. So, oh my word, it is quite south, and let's see. Oh, probably not as south as California, actually, but it's quite south. Let's see. So it's going to give me coordinates. Right, and then I'll find, I don't know, what's the northernmost part?
Something that interested me the other day, just quickly, was longitudinally, we're like halfway up Canada.
Yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
Always sort of think of us as being level with like somewhere in the US, but no, we're way, way, way more northerly than that.
Yeah. Oh, actually, the most northern point of California, you've only got, I want to say, is it Oregon and then Washington?
Yeah.
And they're not the biggest states. Yeah, and it could actually be the case.
No, what? No. The way you said it, it can't possibly be. What are you saying? What's your claim?
The southernmost part of Alaska is more south than the northernmost point of California.
No, hang on.
Yeah, I think. I'm going to yeah, put my stake on that one.
Unless there's some weird little island that belongs to Alaska or something. Because, okay, just looking at this map.
Matignac Island, yes.
Oh, is that what it is? It's some weird island. It's not.
Well, I'll put the
like based on that map. Like Alaska ends way up there and California begins way down there.
Can I put
I see it's off over there. But even then, is that far south?
Oh, it's not even gonna do that, is it? Oh that's the map. You gotta decode it yourself at home.
Yeah, no, I can read SVG.
So I think it could be.
I don't.
No, maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe if that little, so on the map that I sent, if that little red bit that goes off to the side, if there's like, if that carries on with loads of little islands, then yeah, maybe sort of see the point now.
It could. Well, it comes lower than we think, I guess.
Yeah.
I think I might be wrong on that one.
Speaking of languages and things, I think I mentioned this before that I watched the Tip to Tip China on the YouTubes.
You mentioned you've been watching some great YouTube stuff. Tip to Tip China, is that
was fun. Yeah, a couple of dudes on motorbikes going from south of China to Mongolia, essentially. That was fun. But one of the things, because Mandarin, obviously, it's a tonal language, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and often they were given, I think they were given, they had 6 weeks to practice Chinese, to learn Chinese before they went. So their Chinese is very rudimentary.
Yeah.
And the most common thing they were asking for people, like they'd arrive at some town and they go like, is there a hotel? Where's the hotel?
Mm.
And the hotel that were, I'm not going to say this isn't going to be correct Chinese. Obviously, this is just how the letters are to my English brain. So that the word for hotel is like Judian or something like that. But because the language is tonal, if you get the tones wrong, it can just mean something else.
Yeah.
And like, it's interesting to me, like if somebody's new to English and speaking English and they pronounce it incorrectly, or you know they're off, they're not going to be saying, you're just either we'd still understand them, you'd have to go really far to not be understood in that sense, or it would be gibberish. You don't slightly mispronounce something in English and end up saying a completely different sentence, which I find really interesting. So they were going up to people and saying, where's the hotel? But that Judian, if you put the if you do the tones different, it can mean pig shop, dictionary, alcohol, and like a bunch of other things. So they're going up to people like, where's the Judian? And people were going, you want a drink? You want to go over there? There's a pub over there. Oh, you know, they were going, pig shop. We don't have a pig shop. They went up, one group of women they went up to and they said, where is the hotel? But it came across as, does your clock need a dictionary?
Yeah. See, this is why, okay, so you called me out a long time ago for thinking that we should embrace Esperanto as an international universal language because it was too Eurocentric. But well,
It gets criticized for that.
But I have looked at learning Mandarin and I've given up at the first hurdle because it's just like, right, you can say this four different ways and it comes out.
But I don't know Mandarin. I know no Mandarin, but I know things about it. And one of the things I know about it is there's no verb conjugation.
Right, yeah.
And I would love a language knowing. Like, fuck, God, why do we do that? Like the choices in Chinese, and the number system is like, you know, 110, 210, 310, mm. you know, 3103, 1102, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Which is the right way to do numbers. Like, they seem to have made a lot of smart choices that I like.
Yeah, Welsh is like that as well, with Canton.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, Indai tree pedwa pim quech saith uith nar deg, indeg in, indeg die, indeg tree. So 110, die deg, two.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, that's, I will criticize the Welsh language for its mutations, but the counting, you can just, I think as a kid, I learned that in an afternoon. Like, it's just like.
Yeah, you know 1 to 10, you know everything.
Yeah.
But doing 1 to 10, you know the word for 100 and 1,000, and you're good.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So, I mean, if you know 1 to 10, you go 99. How often do you need numbers higher than 99?
Yes, in everyday life. Yeah. I would love to learn. Shaw's learning Mandarin. Friend of the show, Shaw, is learning Mandarin. I'd love to learn Mandarin, but I don't have the. I realized not long ago that with certain things, like with coding or like art stuff or whatever, I'm happy to undergo the process of learning. Mm. Like, you make something, it's a bit shit. You make the next thing, it's a bit less shit. You know, you get better over time.
Yeah.
And it's sort of cumulative. Whereas language and music, I don't enjoy the process of learning.
As in, like, playing a musical instrument.
Yeah. It's the process of learning, that it doesn't feel like, with language, like, you are, there is still that cumulative, you know, you're building up. But, you know, if you're learning painting on your first class, you will do a painting and it is a functional painting. But on your first class of Mandarin, you can't say sentences. You can't have a conversation with somebody.
No,
it's fucking learning languages on me. It's fucking tedious, and I just want to know. I want to know Mandarin. I don't want to learn it.
Okay, I'm going to say something very typically like British when I say this, but there's a lot of good British telly that a lot of people I know who have learned English will watch to get a hold of. Mm. Welsh telly, because I want to know, is rubbish. It's awful.
No, how dare you, Christopher?
Not your Publicum, you know, and all that.
When I was in university at Liverpool and we could get Welsh TV, we watched Publicum and we watched a Welsh quiz show. And this might be offensive to your people and culture, but with the Welsh quiz show, it was me and my flatmate Matt, usually quite drunk, we'd watch this quiz show and the questions obviously were in Welsh and we would just make Welsh-sounding noises. And whichever was closest to the answer got a point.
Well, thank you for engaging with my culture, I guess. I mean, basically, that's a little bit like how I play. What's the one with Victoria Cohen Mitchell?
Connections or something, is it called?
Connect, always connect, only connect. Always,
yeah, only connect, yeah.
Oh, man, I love that show, but it makes me feel like a right dumbass.
Yeah, no, my mum would do like cryptic crosswords in newspapers and stuff, which I just can't get by. Like, when she explains, one of the things, she explains how she got there, I'm like, that makes sense. But I would never have that thought. It's the same with Only Connect. She was great at it. She could do it. But it'd always be like, how did you get to that? She'd explain it. I'm like, yeah, I never would have seen that in a million years.
Yeah, I think with Only Connect as well, you need a lot more. Is it like pop culture knowledge to like make the connections between? Yeah. Well, like a lot of like media, like literally, you know, like I don't think I consume that much like media that other people consume.
No, we're not sort of. I mean, I'm older, much older than you, obviously, but you know, we're on the older end now, so it's not like we're here in the. I mean, also, like back in the day, I never had a particular interest in music, but when you're hanging around with friends, you know, the radio will be on a lot. You just pick it up.
Yeah,
but obviously, I'm not in those kind of situations.
Yeah, and we're not.
Like, I'm not even sure that's a thing now. Like, just radio.
I think if your boss is a boomer, I mean, the thing is, though, as well, like,
and so very briefly, like, similar with TV as well. Like, TV just was, it was whatever was broadcast. So there was a common, there was a shared cultural whatever, you know, within a region. Whereas now it's just people picking and choosing what they individually want to watch. It's less of a shared thing. So I think it's harder to be. Culturally, not, you know, pop culturally knowledgeable, maybe.
I guess so. Yeah, and I don't know if that's for better or worse, to be honest, because I don't know. I like chatting shows with people. I guess that's,
I like chatting about shows.
Oh, actually, that reminds me of something you said earlier about you were thinking about the prospect of rating YouTube series.
Yeah.
Alongside your movies.
Yeah, or, you said keep them as a separate thing, but my thing, like TV movies. I mean, a lot of things on YouTube are just TV shows. In the past, they would have been TV shows. They just happen to be on YouTube. And I don't think they should be. I think it's all visual time based media. It's all fundamentally the same stuff.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I wouldn't rate individual YouTube videos. I wouldn't just go, this was a good YouTube video. But things that are distinctly series,
like the Straight Line Challenge.
Like the Straight Line Challenge. Yeah.
It's been a while since I brought that one up. That would get a 10. That would, yeah. I waited for the Sunday evenings where they would go up. Like, I really.
That's lovely. Yeah,
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And again, it's one of those things that's kind of explory, but it's not hyper masculine. Like, it's just a guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and actually, there are some moments where he's with his friends that genuinely seem touching, that they're sharing this.
Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like those kind of things on YouTube. And
I mean, I definitely want to do that with me as well, but I don't. So I was thinking about making the bash script that I have that does my movie, which is specifically for that page. Like, it just generates that page. There's no settings files or anything like that. It just generates that page. Or those pages now, where it's, cause I've done it by rating, by when I rated it, when the film came out, but I haven't done it by alphabetical of the film. And I asked Rosie something that was like, did I rate this film? And she goes, I don't know. You can't sort them in alphabetical order. I was like, damn.
Hang on, no. Surely alphabetical order is only useful when you can't search.
Yeah, you can't search on my system.
No, you can't. You can control F.
She was on a phone.
Well, don't fucking fuck off then.
What? No, it's
you must be able to search on a phone.
Probably, but it makes sense just to go click on sort alphabetically and then scroll down.
I'd rather search
because you've got a keyboard and a computer.
That's fair. Yeah,
scrolling on a phone is easier. Also, it's easier to.
We should just ban phones. It should be a company policy of ours. We just ban phones from all of our media and websites.
I would be happy to see phone. I was going to say I'd be happy to see phones just disappear from existence, and I probably would be, but there are certain things that they do make things very convenient for. But I mean, when I say phones, smartphones.
You're currently using your phone a lot. Now you're doing the bus thing, like on breaks or whatever. You're looking at stuff.
Not a lot. Like, I've got my RSS feed reader, which is great for like the. But to be honest, that could be replaced by a newspaper. Buying a newspaper, That's a lesser issue. I like that it can store podcasts and music, but I don't listen. Not allowed to listen to those on the buses, nor would I anyway. So I don't listen to a lot of music these days. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, even though I love the fact that podcasts are like the true one form of decentralized media that's mainstream.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Do you listen to podcasts when you're driving a car?
Yes, usually, yeah. Mm. I actually quite like the Linuxy ones, these that like the late night Linux and that kind of stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's just usually keeps you afloat about what's happening in the world, and you pick up interesting.
I just fell off that a few years ago. Yeah, I don't really listen to Linuxy stuff anymore.
Yeah, I quite like. They've done it as a podcast, but it is a radio show. Hamish will slaughter me for this one because it's James O'Brien's Mystery Hour, and James O'Brien is a heinous Blairite. Would you say
James O'Brien?
Oh, he's a. I don't mind him. He is a Labour. He's a radio commentator who's quite strong in the Labour world. Mm. Didn't like Corbyn. I don't know how he feels about like Zach Polanski and stuff, but I think he's probably not too much of a fan.
Yeah,
he's one of those people that sort of when he talks about his views, they're generally quite left wing. He just doesn't like any left wing people. So
I sort of get that, honestly.
Well, actually, to be honest, I actually kind of understand why he doesn't like Corbyn, because Corbyn's followers were so rabid and so aggressive and, quite frankly, so hard to work with as people on the left that I get why. I think that was a massive hindrance to his standing in broader left politics.
I wasn't in stuff then, but look, my impression was like Corbyn pulled in a lot of like just normal people.
There were normal people in it, but like the Momentum people.
Oh, Momentum. Yeah, no, Momentum were. Yeah, no, I get that.
They're just too much. They don't.
Yeah, yeah.
They're anarchy, and they're you know, they're too. I'm sure there was a contingent of Bernie Sanders supporters that were like it as well. Like, and also I get it well from their point of view. It's like, oh my God, someone's come along that represents your views unapologetically on the left. Like, you've got to make them win. You've got
to
get.
We have to organize around this. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I got to be honest, you know, in hindsight, I don't think Corbyn was much of a leader. Like, I agree with his politics, and as a local MP, I'm sure he's excellent. But he just didn't have the chops for leading. And it's a hard thing to do, so that's not a go at Corbyn or anything like that.
No, I absolutely agree. I don't think he had the right... Hang on. Noisy lorry.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he had the temperament or interest in doing the things you need to do. I don't think he had those cutthroat impulses.
No, he didn't, no.
That I think you do need.
He gave his opponents within the Labour Party the benefit of the doubt way too many times.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
He
didn't stand up to the anti-Semitism charges. Harder to do back then, easier to do now, I think. He didn't stand up to them. He sort of submitted to that charge, which made him look guilty.
Yeah,
I think he would have won without that. I think the media piling on him for the anti-Semitism was what. I mean, there's never any one thing, but I think without that, I think he would have won because it was very close. I think he would have won without that, but I don't think he would have been particularly. I do, because sometimes, you know, you sometimes think, oh, I wish I was in the world where Corbyn won. But I think
he could have fucked it up. Yeah.
I think he would have fucked it up. I think like that. It's not really quite naivety. It's not quite the right word in terms of trusting the people who are trying to drag him down. But too nice. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a bit like, I don't think like not the most charismatic person either.
No, I guess not. Not as bad as Diane Abbott, who I have a soft spot for because, like, again, her constituents love her, right? Like,
and
from what I've heard from people that have had her as an MP, they go, yeah, she's just out walking about with people. Like, she's a regular person. Yeah. The trouble is,
she seems like a genuinely nice person. Politics in the right place. Great constituency MP. Mm-hmm. I know she's very smart.
Very smart.
But the problem is, whenever she's on a TV show, she comes across as very not smart.
Yeah,
She just doesn't have that,
So she's one of those people, like, in person, when you give her a bit of time, you know, is great. And, like, as well, when you're a local MP, people see you doing things. Your actions are more of a defining thing, which you don't see on the national stage. So I feel, and, you know, to be fair, first black female MP, that's a worthy...
Oh, yeah, that's
some fucking... What kind of abuse must she have gotten over the years?
Oh, yeah, they've suffered enormous abuse, yeah, even recently. Like, it's not like it was a thing in the past, like even recently.
Yeah. So she's a tough lady as well.
I think part of the problem is that our system and a lot of systems, like you can have somebody who's a great constituency MP and terrible at the other stuff or vice versa. It's very rare to have those. I think those two sort of skill sets or whatever are almost mutually exclusive because they require very different personality types.
Yeah. I mean, is it in fact worth completely like devolving more powers to local councils and then just let MPs
get rid of the idea?
Or, of course, sometimes I think like John Prescott or something raised the idea a long time ago about regional assemblies similar to the Welsh Assembly.
Yeah, yeah.
But that could be,
I'm nervous of having too many levels of government if they're just impotent, the way that councils have become, because they're dependent on central government for their...
county councils is a fine enough size, you know.
Yeah. But again, they're politically neutered by being dependent on central government for their budget, apart from council taxes, which they know everybody hates.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think what we need, and I mean this in a very specific way, we need a Trump of the left.
Yeah. Well, I mean, don't you think Polanski's sort of getting there?
No. We need somebody who appears... I know none of this is actually true of Trump, but appears very straightforward, talks like a normal person, doesn't talk in that political way, cuts through the bullshit, because Trump's all done that for great ill, you know, but somebody who does that for good, you know, because I think all of this sort of, institutional politicians are too willing to play the game that the media wants to play.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, Trump clearly sees the media as hostile to whatever extent that's true and plays it that way. And I think that's very successful. Just ignore that game. Make it look like you're doing what your supporters want you to. He's not, but make it look like you're doing what your supporters want to do. Talk like what they see as. It's the problem is it's all untrue with Trump.
Yeah.
But I want somebody, you know, yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, the issue with that is that a Trump of the left wouldn't give a shit about, wouldn't be in politics. I think that, so the closest thing I would think of...
Okay, so... Quickly, during like, I think it was 2017, 2018, when there was some union stuff happening, there was that union dude who was on TV a lot.
Yeah, Mick. I know the guy, the bald guy, yeah.
Yeah,
he was great.
Somebody... With his kind of demeanor is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but I don't think we'd see him in elected politics. Maybe, I don't think he's got time for that shit. Like, because winning an election is a full operation. Like, because the thing is with someone like that guy is that, like, he probably, like, rose up the ranks of, was it Unite or Unison?
Mm.
And at every stage of the ranks that he was rising up through, he was doing stuff. So, yeah, you know,
no, perhaps you're right. Whereas politics with a big P is
pretending to do stuff or looking like you're doing stuff. Yeah. Showmanship. I think. But also, as well, is like the idea of a Trump of the left, it's kind of a masculine approach to politics. And whereas there are plenty of women who vote for Trump, I think the likes of like Polanski appeal a lot more to women, which I think is something that's beneficial.
I don't think it's inherently masculine. I think it's only masculine because Trump is the example that we have. I think that could equally be a woman. There are women who have that. Zara Sultana's almost that, but not.
She's too. I don't want to say too.
I like her antagonism. I just wish she'd be.
We like antagonistic women, though.
I wish she'd be more strategic about when and where she employs it. I wish she'd fight the right battles, essentially.
Kind of, yeah, I guess so. But then the thing is, it's like anyone that's involved with your party is kind of marred to me. Like, it strikes me as all of Momentum's, like, worst elements distilled into a political party of its own.
I can see that. I mean, it started off bad. Like, there was clearly contention between the Zara Sultana faction and the Corbyn faction. Mm-hmm. I think Zara Sultana was in the right, but it started off with infighting. It started off with certain factions caring about certain things, another faction not caring about those things and caring about something mm-hmm. else. It's just, yeah, it's a mess.
It is. And also, as well, one of the things I think is worth thinking about is a lot of the time, if you're going to have a democratic party, party where all the policy and stuff is democratically put together, that takes time to put together. Like, the Green Party process took, and the Lib Dem Party process took a long time to, like, get all their procedures straight. It's not a...
This might be controversial, but I'm not super in favour of... A party that's democratic in that sense, with the policy coming from the membership. I think largely because of that, and also because it's so easily hijacked.
That is a fair proposition. Like that's one of the things I think Farage kind of got right is you have your figurehead at the head of the party. They direct the course. If you're on board, you join the party. If you're not, you leave the party. You know,
I think I think certainly be sensitive to the interests of the membership and use that in terms of how you characterize things. But like, I'm a bit of a vanguardist with this. I think we need a sort of, people who get the issues can't phrase it.
Oh my God. I'll tell you what, right. This fucking made me laugh so fucking much in a, not a great way in a way. So for the Welsh Senate elections, there was a party called the Open Party. I don't know if you've read anything about them.
No.
They're kind of pathetic, if I'm honest. So here's the idea. It's a new idea for a party, and it's fucking terrible. It's basically all of the worst stuff we've been talking about now distilled into a party, right? So basically, their entire, like, it wasn't even a manifesto. It was like a pledge, right? Is all of the, anyone who gets elected for the Open Party will hold regular town halls, and they'll take feedback from people, and that'll be their policy base.
Which is fundamentally what the Greens are doing by more sort of bureaucratic means.
Yeah, by like strategy and formal stuff and meetings and voting and all that kind of stuff.
But it's never like it, when I've been in situations that work like that with any number of people, because I think the idea is that everybody feels like they're heard, but like you don't. The one person who was listened to feels like they were heard, and the 200 other people feel like they were actively not listened to is what that creates, I think, honestly.
I think so, but the open party was just the worst of it, because it's like, we don't actually have any ideas at the moment, but we'll go out and talk to some people.
Yeah, the idea of like a non-ideological, just...
It's mob. We'll just go out to the mob.
Yeah. I mean, I think in America, the DSA... Which is Democratic Socialists of America, they were kind of the momentum of America. And my understanding is that like regional DSAs all work differently, but I think the worst of them are very much that, just like, Catherine Liu talks about it. You go to a meeting and the first 2 hours are land acknowledgements and sorting out everybody's pronouns. And, you know, if you're a working mum with two kids working three jobs to try and feed everybody, you got to sit through that before you can talk about, I can't pay my fucking rent. Like, it's off-putting to people.
Yeah, I think so. Like, you know, and also as well, if you want to look at statistically what type of polling is usually the best at working out who's going to win, it's usually leadership poll, as in the polling, the popularity of the leader. So, because, you know, you think, a lot of people sort of just think, you don't actually vote for your local MP. They sort of in their minds think, oh, I'm voting for the party. But in reality, the polls bear out that they're voting for the party leader more than anything else. I mean, that's one of the reasons
I think that's a problem with the way our politics works, actually. That's because that they are the leader of the party and they have enormous, they very much direct the party.
Mm.
So, well, I mean, it makes it's not surprising that is the case.
That's where like Zach Balansky and whoever the head of the Lib Dems is now. God, who is, like, is it still Ed Davey?
Not still. I don't know.
But
I wish they'd just fuck off.
I don't even know what they're doing. But anyway,
I never know why anybody votes for them all.
Oh, because Ed Davey went to Thorpe Park on his campaign. You know what? That actually endeared me a little bit. It's like, you know, surely what?
I know it did. I know that it won you over. But like, surely any Liberal Democrat voter at any point in history would just be better off voting. Well, not any point in history, but in the, you know, since the 70s, say, you'd be better off just voting Labour or Tories. Like, it's the same. It's the same.
Yeah.
What's the fucking point?
So the leader of those parties in particular, I'm not sure about Plaid Cymru. They are a bit beholden to their membership insofar that they then have to go out and argue stuff they might not necessarily personally believe because the members demanded it. However, the other side of that is that Labour, almost the entire membership base of Labour are in favour of proportional representation. However, it is never, ever, ever, ever brought up at a House of Commons level, or, you know. Yeah, and I think that's a real problem with Labour.
I think that is sort of the what I'm trying to get at in a nutshell. Like, even if you have a democratic parliamentary party versus a hierarchical parliamentary party, whichever way it is, it works fine until there's a disjunct between the top and the membership. If there's a disjunct between the top and the membership, you have problems either way. So what you need is what I think of as a political party where the top, where the people who believe in the project join the party and support it, not where the party changes what it does based on the support that it thinks, because that just leads to triangulation.
Hang on a minute, you've lost me a little bit there. The party where the people that are in favour of the project join the party.
Yeah, so you stand for something as a party, and people who think that's a good idea support that. That's surely how it should work. And of course, like, a party should be somewhat responsive to its membership, to its supporters, to its, you know, things we hadn't thought of, or ways of presenting something that we hadn't thought of, or that, you know, we didn't know this was an issue. Absolutely. But in a broad sense, we essentially need to go back to ideology. We need the Tories to be the party that represents capital. We need a party that represents Labour. And I mean, that's really, you can cut that finer if you want to, but that's fundamentally, I mean, I'm a Marxist, so that's what I'm going to say.
See, this is where PR comes into play, because, you know, it'd be great to have parties that focus on specific areas of the heart, as it were, what people, what drives people, right? Like, obviously, you've got a great passion for, like, you know, labor and union rights and all that kind of stuff, but there are going to be people out there, animal rights or environment or, heaven forbid, motorist rights, if you're maybe a bit on the right, you know? And having parties that focus on those particular policy areas seems like a good idea to me. But then how do you factor that into a voting system? You know, it's
again, I guess as a Marxist, I see that as all that stuff as secondary. Like, let's sort out the economy and then everything else can follow from that.
Yeah, but what if one party is great on the economy and another party is great on human rights?
No, when I say sort out the economy, I mean get rid of capitalism. That's, you know, goal number one. Or at least do a socialism. Start with, you know, some form of democratic socialism. Just some, let's give us, because the problem is we don't have power. We can't change anything. We're not the ones in charge. It's the dictatorship of capital at the moment. We cannot do anything. Upset that a bit.
Where do conservatives come into this? I mean, at the moment, they are definitely a very capitalist party, but is there a world where we don't have capitalism that conservatives can still exist and not be fascists?
I mean, that depends what you mean by conservative, I guess, because, within the CCP in China, there are conservatives. You know, fundamentally, what conservatism meant...
Traditionalism?
Conservatives, again, think of Ken Clark. Like, they think of themselves as slow progressives. They want to progress, but the worry of conservatives is if you go too fast, you break things.
Yeah.
Which I think is a legitimate concern. I think there's a place in a healthy politics for, I think you want a bit of conservatism to act as that, like, hang on, if we do this, are we not going to break this? Like, you know, it's not my choice. It's not the faction I belong to, but I respect that point of view of let's be careful. There's a party of let's be careful, or the political position of yes, we want things to get better, but carefully. In a
Someone really
way.
Should have told Liz Truss that, because she was not careful.
Well, that's not what British conservatism has been for a very long time, but that's what conservatism fundamentally means. And in a political context, it's they're generally market liberals. They're generally socially progressive. They're liberals, they're traditional liberals. That's what I think conservative is supposed to be in a functioning parliamentary democracy where capital hasn't completely taken over.
Yeah, because there are a lot of conservative ideas that aren't money.
It's not about, this is all post Thatcher. The way we think of conservatism now is all post Thatcher.
Yeah.
Let Ken Clark be your model of what conservatism is kind of supposed to be before neoliberalism happened.
Yeah. My Monmouth Shillow County Council, when it was a conservative one, had that One Nation Labour, that kind of John Majory, that kind of Ken Clark kind of Labour. And honestly, they weren't bad.
That's the thing. You can work with them. They represent really the Marxist idea that the bourgeois is a potentially revolutionary class. They are the party of the bourgeois.
Yeah.
And Marx, I think Marx believed, and various socialists and communists and Marxists believe that it's a split as to whether you believe the bourgeoisie is potentially revolutionary or not. But I lean towards they are, and I lean towards you've got to bring those people with you. You've got to bring the conservatives with you.
Yeah, I guess. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it, really? I mean, a lot of them don't even... And when I say conservatives, obviously I mean like just normal people that perhaps aren't so hot on labels and things like that. They're happy to work in their own interest and the interest of their community. So anyone who's sincere like that, you want on side, don't you? Even if you don't see eye to eye on all of the issues, as long as someone's vaguely, working in good faith and... for the betterment
I think that's another thing that needs to, because it's all, again, it's not about doing politics anymore. It's about winning a media game. So I believe that, like, for example, if a left-wing party emerges, maybe it'll be the Greens who emerge as a successful left-wing mass party. If on a particular issue, they line up with reform on this one issue, say proportional representation.
Yeah.
Absolutely work with them on that issue. If you agree with anybody on an issue and you can get that through and that issue is for the good, work with those people. That doesn't taint you. We need to forget that. You've got to be careful about empowering the other one. You've got to weigh that into your decision for sure. But like, broadly speaking, work with people who agree with you to achieve things that are good for the people.
Yeah. I think that's very much easier said than done, because the idea with reform for me is that they're a party of liars, you know?
Yeah.
And trusting them would be very difficult for me, even though since the days of UKIP and all that kind of stuff, I know that UKIP technically still exists, but you know what I mean? You know, that group of people, that sector.
Reform
of,
is what was UKIP, yeah.
Yeah. They've been talking about wanting proportional representation for such a long time, but then they talk about that, you know, they've said things about they're going to lift the 2-child benefit cap. Well, they've U-turned on that, and I feel that they would U-turn on their nationalism, the nationalisation of things.
I don't think PR would actually be good for reform. I think they're getting more than their share because of the way the system works now. But in a world where they did genuinely want, and I'm not saying make an alliance with them, and I'm not saying quid pro quo. I'm saying the agreement is we work together for this thing we agree on.
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, Plaid Cymru, who have won the Senedd elections, do not have a majority. Now, not even with Greens and Lib Dems. Greens got 2, Lib Dems got 1 seat. So not even with those 3 seats are they a majority. They're just a little bit shy. Mm. They have said that they don't want to team up with Labour because people clearly voted against Labour. So then jumping into bed with Labour kind of is a bit of a betrayal on the move against Labour people's frustration. So they've decided...
Well, Welsh Labour are a bit different, aren't they? But no, I think that's fair enough.
Yeah, Welsh Labour are very different, although they are a bit directionless since Mark Drakeford stood down. Mm-hmm. They're not like bad people. The cabinet is fundamentally still there, but like Mark Drakeford had, he had vision, drive, good leader. And they don't have anything to replace him with, which was a bit of a shame. But yeah, there was clearly a voter move away from Labour. So Plaid Cymru were like, you know what? We're just going to form minority government. We're going to do what we can. Ad hoc. And just hope that we bring forward good ideas.
Whenever we got close to or achieved a hung parliament in the UK, it was always who do we ally with, rather than just work on an issue basis with people who agree with you on those issues. Like, what's the problem? Because otherwise, as opposed to making a deal with the fucking what's the Northern Irish Party called, and then giving them billions of horrible regressive reactionary cunts billions of pounds.
SDP, was it SDP?
Not SDP, but yeah, whatever. Sorry for not knowing.
It's a 3-letter initialism, isn't it?
Yeah, basically Ulster Unionists of various sorts, right? I was just looking at the electoral calculus site, which tends to get this stuff pretty right. So that's their current whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the predicted votes and predicted seats is based on current polling, based on the most recent polling. So Reform. Reform are getting 27% of the vote and a third of the seat.
Yeah.
So I don't think they would be interested in PR at the moment. I think, Greens, look at Greens are getting half the vote of Reform and, what, 6th of the seats?
Yeah.
that's the fucking stupid system we live under.
That is, yeah.
I mean, Labour with... a fifth of the votes and 83 seats. Again, Labour and Tories getting virtually the same share of the votes, and significant difference. It's a stupid fucking system.
Yeah. Well, Tories have their farmers, don't they? They're probably rural. They got that rural stronghold.
They could go reform.
They could go reform. They could, go reform. Yeah, Reform did. They did well in Wales, shamefully, and that hurts my soul because. They openly say they're the party of Thatcher economics, and it's like, hello, hello.
I think that's one of those short memory things.
Easily tricked things. That's the thing. It's like no one. If you go up to your average Reform voter in Wales and ask them, did you know that Reform openly claimed to be the party of Thatcher's economics? They go, no, I'm wrong. What the fuck? No, I didn't know that. What's economics?
Yeah,
I don't. Unfortunately. Unfortunately, someone said this in a toot on Mastodon. People in an industry massively overestimate the knowledge that people outside of that industry have of their industry. And that's the same for politics. That's the same for tech. Same for almost everything. It's like why people who read a lot of politics stuff, they're racking their brains going, why have people fallen for reform? It's clearly a grift. They're clearly lying.
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
Yeah, but they're not as in deep. They're just like, you know, their knowledge of reform probably comes from conversations in a break room. Or
Again, it's like Trump. I think people are responding. I do think we should be careful with this because I think people do know their political situation. That like people understand their conditions and they vote based on that.
Their conditions, but not the abstract stuff.
Not the abstract stuff, but I think there's a lot of just like vibes. Like I think this is another thing that I like Catherine Liu a lot, and this is something that Catherine Liu goes into in because you mentioned like the masculinity of Trump and stuff, and there's a lot of men. The world has over the past couple of decades been very feminized, in the sense that a lot like a lot of women in sort of managerial positions, including like things like teachers. Think about how many teachers are female versus male. So young men, and not only. Not only just being female, but, you know, pushing, I don't want to sound like a reactionary with this, but, you know, pushing feminist stuff and feminist ideas to the forefront, all that stuff. It does leave men feeling a little bit like, what about us? And also, where are my male role models? Which I think is something, and this doesn't only apply to men. I think perhaps certain things have been feminized to the point where, you know, and this includes women, just want a bit of masculinity, want somebody who seems masculine, has masculine qualities. I didn't say that well. I don't know what I come across like, but yeah, I think they're responding to the masculineness of reform, Trump. I mean, it's hard to sell with reform because Farage doesn't feel very masculine to me, but it's a particular kind of...
The thing is, like, my brain doesn't work with this, right? I don't like Trump wears fucking makeup and he eats McDonald's all fucking day.
Yeah, no, it's when I say Matt, it's a more sort of almost like cosmic, you know, like feminine. The feminine is the caring, the concerned, the explainy, the emotional, and the masculine is the you know, active action, doing things, not thinking too much. Straightforwardness, or it's those qualities that I think have been diminished in. I mean, it sort of starts in HR in companies and it's spread out to the rest of the those things have been sort of given the appearance of toxicity, and like within a certain, you know, bourgeois liberal class or sort of, it's almost like any traits that fall into that masculine bucket in the sort of cosmic sense have been lumped in with all the problems and have been sort of demonized a little bit. I think there's something to that. Again, not saying any of this well. Please give me the benefit of the doubt when listening to this. So I think there is a desire for, we don't like a feeling that there's a lack of balance between the, I care, I'm listening to you, I care about your feeling, you know, I want you to feel seen and heard and all this like wishy-washy stuff, and something a bit more like, I'm going to do this, this, and this.
This is something my brain cannot empathize with, like in terms of just because my idea of gender roles don't are like basically not the same as everyone else's views of gender roles. Like here's an example of one thing that I just don't get when it comes to right. So I see a lot of like youngish guys who drive white Range Rovers, right? In my head. The Range Rover is the Penny Mordaunt car, right? Like, it is a very feminine soccer mum thing to drive.
No, to be clear, this isn't about gender. It gets the problem is that it gets connected with gender. It's only about gender in a, like, in again, that cosmic philosophical sense. Like, in the sense that a cat is feminine and a dog is masculine.
Okay.
You know, a cat is svelte and elegant and, you know, like... flowing and sinuous and has all these qualities, and a dog is like boisterous and robust and aggressive, and the gender binary in that sense, not applying in any way to sex and not even to gender as we think of it as people. It's always like a yin and yang.
Right? Okay. All right. That's yin a bit, yeah. And
yang. So Trump is a yangy. I think the yin, I'll use yin rather than feminine.
Okay.
The yin has been overemphasized for a few decades. I think that's a fair claim, and so people long for the yang a little bit, but they're responding to just the aesthetic yang, because as we say, Trump isn't actually masculine. He's not actually doing things. He's not actually active. but they're longing for at least a semblance of Yang.
Okay, all right.
Not Andrew Yang, to be clear.
I know. Who was interesting, but I still wouldn't vote for him. But interesting.
You were far more interested in Yang than I.
Yeah, I thought Yang, he was...
Yang and Carlson was his name, the surgeon. Like, those two sort of... There's something about them.
How can a surgeon be so dumb? That is fascinating to me.
So dumb. It was amazing.
Oh, man. That is a statement about intelligence, how you can be really... Because apparently he was a really good surgeon.
Yeah. I do. There are certainly kinds of intelligence, yeah.
Honestly, if someone did... See, sometimes I feel like I'm turning into a single-issue voter, but I'm not. This is just a yardstick to which I measure people. How much are you going to tax a rich? That's my,
Yeah, no, I mean, that's... Yeah, but we're not... The problem is we're not there yet. We're not in a position where that's even a possible... area of political...
If someone is talking about it, saying they'll do it unapologetically, not umming and ahhing, and, oh, we've got to be careful not to send jobs overseas.
Those people are not going to get elected, especially in our system. I think they've got more of a chance in America, but not for the presidency, obviously. But
But that's me. That's just my... Do you know what I mean?
That's the first step to getting to a point where we do have... In order to have political power, we need to begin dismantling capitalism.
Yeah.
To whatever extent. I'm not saying, for the people who don't want to get rid of it completely, you want social democracy, I'm on board. If we can get to social democracy, great, I'll work with you. But we don't have any political power until we dismantle that a bit, and that's step one.
Yeah. But step one of that step one is stop the people who have all the money from having all the money. Like that, yes. that just that wealth unbalance, puts too much power in the hands of too few people. Simple,
but it's so interconnected. You know, they own all the media, so they get to dictate. You know, they choose.
Yeah, it's interconnected. But the one thing it all has in common: money. So you got.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. No, 100%. I agree.
Guillotines.
I just want to go like looking at this predicted votes. Like if this continues, if Reform don't do something stupid and disappear politically. I mean, even if they do, that political consensus has to go somewhere.
Nathan Gill got sent to prison for 10.5 years for taking Russian bribes. They cannot do anything. I don't understand why that doesn't raise red flags for people.
It goes back to the Trump thing, which I think was from the debates back in the day, where he was like, people love me. I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and nobody would give a shit.
But like, no one liked Nathan Gill as well. Like, no one knew who he was, even though he was like he was like the biggest UKIP guy in Wales. And like, no one knew. It's all Farage.
I don't think people have ever cared. I think when there were political scandals in the past, the media cares. People care in a soap opera-y kind of way, gossipy way. I don't think it affects their... If you look at... It was when I was looking at...
He got sent to prison for 10 years. That's a lot of years. Dead years, was we said. Yeah. Like, that's not even a little scandal. That is the biggest scandal.
Oh, yeah, no, it's huge.
It's huge.
I don't think people care. But anyway, so say Reform carry on like this, and we have at least a Reform minority government. That's the next election, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most likely. I don't mean this in an accelerationist way. It's not quite that. But I do think a Reform government would be a fucking shambles, and they would hang themselves.
Yes, no,
I
definitely
feel like maybe the quickest way to get past this is have them win, have them completely discredit themselves, and then hope that that's over.
I mean, I agree with the observation.
Is that least damage in the long run?
Well, the trouble is with
the Greens. I'd rather the Greens. I think any political future where the Greens or whoever is the left party don't recapture the vote that Reform took from Labour is not sustainable.
A left party needs to be a left party, is what you're saying.
A left party needs to get the lots of rabbit ears, traditional working class vote for it to be. It can't just be a party of the bourgeois liberal left. Otherwise, it's that tension within society is just going to keep increasing, keep ramping up.
You're right. But again, this is where I feel like my knowledge hits a wall, because it's like I don't understand why working class people are voting for Reform when they want to get rid of the minimum wage.
Yeah, I think what it is, it's the absolute inauthenticity of politicians for the last however long you want to tag them with that. Keir Starmer is the absolute fucking epitome of that. But like, it's a fool me once kind of situation. Like, they're sick of voting for people who said the right things and then did nothing for them.
Well, then, Reform are just selling them a bridge at this point then.
Yeah, but it's going to take them 30, 40 years to realize that that's the same thing on the right. Reform are doing the same thing, but it's going to take them for a long time to realize that. I'm using this term correctly, like there's a huge credibility gap. And I think with those kind of voters, when you look or feel like a bourgeois liberal, like a metropolitan bourgeois liberal, you're not going to win them. You just can't win them over. There is an aesthetic component.
Yes, there is an aesthetic. That's why Applied Cymru are doing very well. They've got that working class idea. Yeah. You know that.
I know the Greens know this and are working towards it. I know that they know this. I think Polanski's very smart. I think they're making the right choices and they're choosing candidates who will have that kind of appeal. So yeah. I know that they're working on this. I just don't know whether it'll work.
I mean, I think Greens have known it for a long time, really. But the trouble is because you think very staunchly about this in class, where I guess I probably default to money, which obviously overlaps a lot, but there is distinctions.
Yeah,
because in the Greens, you've got a lot of like student class people who are typically low cash, but you don't think of them as the same melange of working class as your...
No, which very much used to be the case, but yeah, they used to be the most radical. I don't think they're the most radical anymore. In a particular sense, they are. Yeah, I think one of the problems with the Greens, and it's one of the problems with the Greens being democratic, is like a huge part of their base membership, you know, historically is sort of NIMBY-ish, you know, grandmas and middle-aged people.
That's certainly a segment of them, yeah. But then, you know, so them and students, you know, a lot of nurses in the Greens as well, but
we do need that traditional, or at least, you know, a good share of that traditional working class vote. Just even to be legit, I think even if the Greens win without that, like I say, I think I've said it, but like that tension remains, and it's the longer that tension goes irresolved, the more damage that's going to do ultimately, I think.
Yeah, no, that's a fair assumption, and this is why things like PR actually can help, because in the case of Wales, you've got a left party that's a good party, a competent party, that do have that working class segment in Plaid Cymru, and you've got people who believe fundamentally the same policies in the Greens, but they appeal to a different class of voter. Those two parties are typically quite good at working together as well, but they capture two different voter bases. You're kind of joining the problem of campaigning versus governing, because that's always something that's difficult in translation. Mm. Reform, of course, excellent campaigners, can't deny that. Awful any time they've ever been put in charge with something. So it's...
I'm not sure whether... Maybe the split party, maybe that Welsh model of, Plaid and Greens, you know, Greens getting the bourgeois vote and Plaid getting the working class vote. Maybe something like that would work here, maybe, if your party hadn't been such a fucking shambles.
Also, is there a way...
I don't know whether that resolves that conflict or not.
I have a complicated view with nationalism, right? Especially in Wales, where nationalism isn't necessarily a right-wing thing. It probably exists more on the left than it does on the right. But I don't tend to like the idea of nationalism because I can't help but see it as one of those tools that powerful people use to manipulate people, right?
Absolutely.
You know, you do, like the typical example is your North Korea, where everything's all hail, glorious leader, and that kind of thing. but is there a way in England, do you think, where you can get a left-wing nationalist party? Like, is that something that can...
I don't know what English nationalism would even mean in a left context. Aside from, I can see sort of regional. It's not nationalism then, obviously, but a regionalist, an anti-London kind of. In the same way that the problems SNP have with England or Plaid have with England, really, it's the problems with London and the rest of. I've said this before, but the rest of England has those same problems with London.
Yeah.
So you can't have. You can't have an English nationalism that in any way includes London because they are the problem.
No. So again, I'm thinking more about aesthetics rather than policy. Because there are people who have, you know, like that might think of themselves as nationalists, but they're not going to think of themselves as left or right. Can a left nationalist party, using aesthetics, capture that reform segment, but with less?
I mean, I guess so. The question there is English identity such that it is inherently sort of toxic, or is there a? I mean, you could appeal. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's so there was a sort of. To the extent, so many caveats going into this, but to the extent that Blair represented the left, under Blair, during the, what was it, like, Cool Britannia and stuff, there was a sort of a soft leftish British nationalism.
Mm. Or like when we hosted the Olympics.
Yeah. It was embarrassing, but yeah. But like, it was the, in art, like there was the, what were they called? Like the young British artists were like the, you know, the most widely known and prestigious, like your Damien Hirsts and stuff.
Mm.
And then you had, you know, the Spice Girls, you had the Britpop stuff. It did feel like there was a sort of a bit of a British cultural revival and a bit of a sort of modern British identity that wasn't toxic. I think that's the closest we've got. It's under Blair, so it's sad. But I think something along those lines, but more interesting, not just about pop culture.
Did Boris Johnson kind of try and capture that sometimes as well?
Yeah, I think he did. Yeah. But he didn't. For some reason, Blair read us cool. A reason I've never understood, but he was able to pull off cool.
It's because he came after Thatcher and Major, and he was just like, because I remember thinking about it when I was like 10 years old or whatever. I go, oh my God, this guy, he's so, like, I didn't use the term young and dynamic, but it's like, he's not old like prime ministers usually are.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Even though, what was he, like 50 or something at the time, or 40 something?
And you know what? Same time in America, Clinton read as cool as well. You know, it was on whatever show he was on, playing the saxophone, and like there was jokes at the time. Understand that these jokes don't land anymore, but like America's first black president was a joke.
Oh yeah. I think Obama was cool, like actually cool.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, no, he was.
No. I think he was one of the least cool presidents that I can think of. Honestly, he was so uncool. He was so dorky.
No, I comments. Leave the comments. I want to hear other people's opinions on this.
This is obviously politics aside. I think W is the coolest politician, the coolest president for a long time. He was cool. He had an effortless affability. He made mistakes, and it was just fun. Like W was cool. Evil.
Yeah. No. No. Cool. No. Yeah. He had.
And I was like, this isn't just like president, because I very much like Nixon. I'm interested in Nixon. Nixon, completely uncool, absolute fucking spod. JFK, obviously cool, prick, but cool. Obama is like did you watch any of the president's correspondence dinners, the ones that didn't have shootings back in the day?
I think so.
He just comes across as so fucking dorky.
I didn't get that. Is this me? Is this a me thing? Really? Am I? Do I not?
I'm curious what the audience.
He plays basketball,
but he looked like a dork playing. But he looked like a nerd playing basketball. He didn't look like somebody who knows basketball.
But he is president. There is going to be a nerdy quality, something of a nerdy quality about all presidents.
I'm taking presidents as the baseline. Clinton was a very cool president. Already mentioned him. Obviously, Clinton was cool. W was cool. Who else? Who else is cool? I've not had many cool presidents.
What about HW?
No. He's very like company man.
What about Trump?
In a particular way, yeah. Again, he's got that ease. He's got that nothing bothers me kind of, you know. Like, it's not, none of it is true. He's deep, you know, he's horribly not narcissistic and neurotic and blah. But like, in terms of media appearance and stuff, yeah, he has that. Yeah.
I hate the fact that I get a laugh out of his stump speeches and shit.
Exactly.
Like the one
that randomly went on a couple of years ago about like boats and sharks and batteries.
Yeah,
amazing.
Or the one where the campaign rally where he just like was like, you know what? Let's just listen to some music for this one.
Even I mean, it was evident even during the debates before he was candidate. Like he was in those debates, he was like, he was the naughty kid in the back of class.
Yeah.
Who didn't respect the rules, didn't respect. And I was like, you know, that's cool. In that cultural conception, that's cool. I don't find him cool, to be clear. I don't find George W. Bush cool, or, you know, Clinton's a monster. Like, but in that media-ish kind of way, yeah, they're cool. And Obama was like, I just got to say, he's like President on The Simpsons, you know, he's like default president, robot president man.
President man from The Expanse.
Exactly, yeah.
Joe Biden wasn't cool, was he?
Joe Biden, I think, is, if this is wavelength.
Yeah.
He's just slightly cool. Because when he would tell stories, because he would often tell stories about how well he got on with black people back in the day, and like belonging to a street gang and stuff, and he was bumbling, and I think earlier he read as, like, I never liked him, but like he read as cool at certain points. I think he just tried to be cool, because it was that
in his younger day.
Did you see the election ad where he's in a Corvette?
No, I haven't. No,
oh, it's horrible. It's horrible. It's so embarrassing. It's an election ad. It's like a few minutes long, and he's just talking about how cool Corvettes are and how cool cars are and how good his dad was at driving. And then it's like, vote Biden. This is where we've got to. Like, policy. Do you remember policy? Kamala didn't have any fucking policy.
Did she not? She was cool, though. Policy.
Do we read cool differently?
Obviously.
She just seemed medicated.
She just seemed lovely. I liked her. Nice.
I want to do a poll.
Yeah,
there must be a poll.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't have a, like, I get this wrong all the time.
I get this wrong. I think it's pretty subjective.
But it's like this. Yeah, I don't understand that kind of, you know, mass appeal, the pull that. You know.
Okay, I'm Googling it. A lot of people are saying Barack Obama was cool.
Hey!
I can't see that myself, but yeah. So AI is saying, for what that's worth, Barack Obama, JFK, Teddy Roosevelt, Bill Clinton, and H.W. Bush.
Oh my word, what?
He was no cool.
No, he wasn't cool. Did it say Clinton in there? Did you say Clinton?
Yeah, Clinton was in there, yeah. Teddy Roosevelt, I don't know. That's a long time ago.
Teddy, yeah, well, he was, I mean, he wouldn't be cool by today's thing. Teddy Roosevelt, he was like,
maybe he was cool in the sense he was like hunter man and like wildsman, woodsman kind of,
yeah, know, yeah,
hunting the bear and all that shit. I don't know.
I guess so. But what I think of as cool and what other people think cool is something I
don't want to be like whatever, but. Or accuse anybody of racism, but are people reading Obama as cool just because he's black?
I think that has like an element to it.
Because that's racism.
It might be racism, but it might be there might be. I mean, that's not to say that black people can't be uncool, but I think it gives him some sort of edge, or like, you know. Am I wrong? Am I wrong, people? Comments on that one. I think it kind of gives him...
I mean, clearly, I think the consensus, based on that cursory Google search, I think the consensus is going to be with you, but no, just very dorky, to be very awkward and dorky.
There's a lot of things in, like, black culture or from, like, black origins that are cool, like the blues and, you know, a lot of rock. And...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, which is why that sort of racist association exists. Yeah, are inherently cool.
Yeah, because they invented a lot of cool stuff.
I mean, fundamentally, what that is black people not being allowed into careers, but being allowed into entertainments. And entertainments is cool. Sports and music is cool. Yeah. And those were the things they were allowed to do, so they're more prominent than that. So that's where I think that's fair to say. That's where that association.
I think that's fair. That's why you know when you. Oh God, I'm about to go into some very dodgy fucking territory here. But it's like, you know how there are Jewish populations in New York and California, and so you get you get a large representation of Jewish people in certain industries because they tend to cluster.
What,
you know,
what are those? What are those industries, Chris? What are the Jews in control of?
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. No. Just you know, New York industries and California industries. They just you know, but it's okay. I don't have a problem with it.
I mean, it is a like historically Jewish communities have placed a lot of emphasis on education and often you know taking care of their own education. Mm. So yeah, it's just It's sad for Jews that they were often sort of a little bit insular and very well educated.
Mm.
And if you want Anglo-Saxons to hate you, be insular and well-educated.
Now, I don't know if I'm wrong on this, but I heard that if you're a practicing Jewish person, you go to temple on the Sabbath, but on the Sabbath, you're not allowed to drive because you're not allowed to work on the Sabbath, and driving counts as work. But also walking longer than 2 miles counts as work. So
yeah,
like if you're Jewish and practicing, you've got to basically live 2 miles from a temple, and that's probably why that probably aids.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If I'm not mistaken on that.
I think this is real. This is for the this might be nonsense, but I think it's real. The thing I read online. So for the hardcore Hasidim, the Hasidic Jews in Israel, like they had to design special phone boxes where pushing the buttons didn't count as work. I think it had to be like a capacitive thing, because like activating a button if you're really fucking hardcore, this may be wrong, but yeah, stuff like that, which is interesting. I know I've got a friend who born over here, went to teach in America for a bit, and now lives in Israel with his wife. Mm-hmm. So Israeli, he's culturally British, and enjoys bacon, but obviously lives in a community that is, I think it's about half Muslim and Jewish. But the Jewish neighbors. So if anybody catches him cooking bacon, they have to, before anybody, because they've got a lot of kids, and before anybody, any of the other families, the Jewish families, will let their kids visit the house, they have to do this thing of taking all the cookware and burying it for like 3 days or something. Like that's the ritual to cleanse anything that's touched pork. This is the ritual you do. So they have to do it sort of, if they get caught, they have to performatively, and they have a special, you don't even have to dig the hole. It's like a hatch that they have in the garden ready for this.
Oh, right.
You sort of have to like performatively show the neighbors that they were cleansing everything. It's okay. Which is,
okay. Why not just keep your cutlery in the outdoor cupboard?
I think that was similar. What did that come up on? Like, I think it was asking him about, like in terms of eating things that you're not allowed to eat as a Jewish person, like shellfish and pork and stuff. I'm like, did you ever just like, is it any, like a delicious looking meal? Is it okay to just not ask what's in it? And he said, like, that's a strategy that a lot of Jewish people employ, like, just don't ask what's in it and eat it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I think it would be my choice, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But a lot of these ideas, aren't they based on, like, hygiene practices from many years ago?
I mean, that's an assumption that's made. It adds up, yeah. Yeah, I mean, pork, white meat and shellfish go off very quickly. Some of it makes sense. Some of them make less sense.
I don't fully understand the context in which they arise, but surely if that's the case, see, this is the bit where, with tradition, isn't it, it's like, it's okay, so it may not be functionally applicable now, but does practicing those old rituals connect you with your ancestors a bit better? Is that what the true purpose of those kind of rituals are, is to connect you with your family?
Theologically, the rules, and this applies to pre-Pauline Christianity as well, like the point of the rules is it's a covenant with God. It's how you demonstrate that you are faithful, by observing the covenant, the agreement.
Okay, yeah. So it's not, so whereas it might have once derived from a practical reason, the mythology remains to this day.
I think it's fair to say, I think Catholicism is very, good at the theatre of having this building that's like beautifully, subjectively, but gold and paintings and statues and like it, this place that feels special, and then the incense and the chanting, especially with the Latin Mass, it's in a magic language that you don't understand. I think Catholics get ritual and using ritual to sort of make you feel like you're in a special elevated place.
Theater. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay, so one thing I wanted to talk about in our thing today was I was talking about it on the text chat, wasn't I? There's no segue for this bit. I was thinking about, so you were talking about possibly having YouTube reviews on your page and everything like that. And I was possibly thinking about. So what my script does for my page that memorizes the not memorizes, that sorts my thing, my movie reviews, is it possible, if I'm writing a script that puts in and takes out the data, to instead have the database be an RSS file itself, or like a JSON file? Is that used for databases?
I mean, you could, yeah, or XML, more generalized XML. You could do that. I don't think either format. I think TSV, CSV, whatever, is much easier to work with, especially with bash tools.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do that, but then then it's either some horrible text processing, or you use like an XML library or a JSON, like JQ would be for JSON. But are you thinking of having the RSS and then deriving the site from the RSS rather than the other way around? I think it would be fiddly, but I see the sense of it. I see the sense of making the RSS primary and then generating a page from that. That's interesting.
Hang on a minute. What is it now at the moment? Right. So, I've got to log in. Okay. So it is, okay, so what does it do? How does it do this? So it starts off with... This is longer than I remember it. Okay, so... okay, all right, I've done a lot here. Right, so it takes... right, so it's got... so it outputs the 3 HTML files, 1 XML file. It looks for the... actually, it's probably best if... Oh, damn, right. Side story. I've gone back to Xterm. One of the issues with Xterm that I quite liked that Kitty does is that you can actually scroll down very easily and then just copy a bunch of stuff out of the terminal, like a script, and then paste it somewhere else. So if I'm working on a script and I'm running it as I go, then I've just butchered a script file, and it's like, well, I should have done that through Codeberg and done it the boring Git way, yada, yada, yada. But it's like, okay, well, I'll just copy-paste it into Codeberg, and then it all counts. But with this, I can't quite scroll all the way down. Yeah, I can scroll
What do you mean by you can't scroll? Aren't you working in Vim at this point? Is this the wrong command on the command line?
I did cat, and then the script.
Okay. And how in Kitty do you...
I just scroll up or scroll down. Use the mouse wheel if necessary.
And Xterm doesn't scroll like that for you?
It scrolls like that, but not scrolling while selecting.
Oh.
I want to select lots. When I'm not SSH'd in, I pipe it into Yank, which is a script I made that puts it into the clipboard.
Yeah, I had something like that for a while. Let me see if it... Scrolling while I need more output. So you like select at the bottom and then scroll up.
Kind of. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, it doesn't, does it? Yeah, that's interesting.
That's the Other than that, I'm doing quite well with Xterm. I like the John Major. I'm going back to basics. okay.
Yeah, I like Xterm. Yeah.
It
does the job, and it opens.
Okay. Oh, then I've set the delimiter as comma, and then I create the CSV file if it's missing, which I'm not entirely sure why I did that. Maybe I should just exit if it's missing.
I think that's it's in case it's first.
Oh, wait a minute. I did. The comment. I did that. Yeah, no, the comment. I misdone the comment. As in, it did do that. I changed it, and then I didn't fucking update the comment. Okay, so. right. Okay, then, yeah. Let's see. So then it makes the site directory if it doesn't exist. Then it starts with the HTML header. Then it generates the date so that you know when it's last been generated. Then you've got the navigation bar, and then you've got the footer, but that gets piped in later down. Then it generates the HTML table. So it starts off with the HTML. Then it does the, yeah, so it's, I've put it into 3 variables. Is it variables?
Mm-hmm.
And then, and then it generates the feed. No. Then I do the same thing with a variable for the top of the RSS. Then I do variables for by title, by score, by review date. Then I put those variables into the item tags of the RSS. I just do it separately. I take the data and then I just put it.
You could start with the RSS and work backwards. Yeah.
I don't know. Is there anything to be gained from that though?
Well, you have one less file.
Does that matter?
Not really, but I mean, it could be a fun. I mean, none of this matters. Which means like, this is for us. This is fun.
Yeah. But then, yeah, I quite like that I output it in an R, because I just use XML Starlet. Is that what it's called? Yeah, XML Starlet.
What's that?
It's a library or like a command line tool, depending on how you use it, where it just manipulates XML files for you.
Oh, okay, that's handy.
Yeah. So, like, if I want to extract stuff or combine stuff or whatever, like, it's a nice little tool that basically does that. I sometimes try and not use it to like keep my dependencies down, but to be honest, so useful. And sometimes when I'm fucking up a lot, I'm like, just use XML Starlet, and I've already got it installed. Yeah. So it's a really good tool for dealing with XML, really, to be honest. Unless you want to do like, it's my way of getting out of ridiculous sed commands that you like to do.
I do love my, I think, because often when I'm making these scripts, it's like, it's a way to push down my anxiety. Mm. So like the puzzle of working out how to do it with sed is actually what I want. It's what my brain wants.
It works.
Intentionally inefficient.
Did you ever work out how to do the ampersand in blop?
Yeah, no, that's fixed. Yeah.
Ah, good.
Yeah, okay. I think I messaged you. I think we talked about it. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
It was that thing where and had a meaning and said that I didn't realize where it refers to the thing you searched for. So if it finds an ampersand in the result, it will replace that with the search term, something like that.
Right. Did you have to change the ampersand to something else then, or?
I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then you changed it to the paragraph symbol or something?
No, that's what I tried when we were working on it. But that, no, it's a different. That wasn't the problem. The delimiter wasn't the problem.
Okay. I need to update my blob.
Yeah, I'm gonna find this now, am I? This script is too fucking long.
Yeah, some of mine. Oh, I mean, what I would like to do, what I've been working on, is so. So if you go to a website called, so you go to freebooters.uk/blog, I think it is free.
Oh, I had to do is in the input to double backslash the ands before they went into the said command.
Double backslash.
Yeah. One for real and one for set.
Okay. Wow, that would have took me a while to find.
It took me a while to find, honestly.
If you look at I've been working on a script that does this, right? So freebooters.uk/blog. I think every hour, I want to say, or every couple of hours or something like that, it rechecks for this, and it's an RSS feed of basically my website, your website, Wing and Subderm's website.
You still haven't put Subderm's in it though.
Have I not put Subderm's in it? Wing's in there. No, it isn't. I don't see Subderm's in there. Is it on the to-do list? Let me just have a look. I haven't managed to work out his RSS is different. Let me just check. freebooters/log, and then there should be a feeds.txt file. Wing. Oh right, yeah. No, I haven't put it in there. Okay. Right. So subderms is what's it? There we go.
You got it?
Yeah, I got his website. RSS. So I'm just going to take the RSS from the front of his page, which I assume is the one. And then I'll pop that in. And then.
He uses blop.
Oh, he uses blop, does he?
He uses blop, yeah.
And what should I put him down as? Subdermal cassette loader, full name?
Yeah, why not?
Is that separate words? One word?
No, I think it's all one.
Okay, I'll camel case it. But Subderm, if you're listening, and then how do I do it now? Do I do agriblop? That's what I've called it, agriblop. And then do feed fetched. And then if I go onto the website and then do the international freebooter. Oh, there we go. Yeah, subderm's there.
Pulled in. Lovely.
So what I want to...
Good start.
Yeah, yeah. And also, yeah, he's sort of contented it out a little bit. Oh, spaffing it out.
Yeah, spaffing it out. That's a good post.
So what I want to do with that is I want to make that a more versatile script. At the moment, it just takes text posts in RSS feeds and then interlocks them together, basically using XML starlet. But what I want to do is I want to do something like that, but for all of the stuff that I do online, because it's, I don't know, like having maybe a little bit on my front page, which is just, here's the last 5 or 10 things I've done, podcasts, videos on PeerTube, posts, something like that. And I'm having a lot of trouble with that because of the versatility angle. Does it generate it as a RSS podcast with enclosure tags or link tags? And I'm tripping over myself a little bit, but I'm
okay. In my one where I should stick mine on my website really, and have a sim. Although then that's pointless. Cause, anyway, this is what I do for that, and this seems to handle podcasts I've thrown at it, and it handles YouTube RSS. So that does it for me.
Okay. Enclosure.
Just search for enclosure.
Else link.
Yeah, so link is basically just the bit of the RSS that I'm searching for. So if enclosures exist in the file, then take those. Otherwise, take the links, essentially.
So you grep enclosure. Is there a reason it's enclosure but without the final bracket on the end of enclosure?
Because you don't know what the fuck comes after that, because it's completely non-fucking standard what order the things come in. So right. Yeah, just search for the opening enclosure tag and then send that line out and then process that.
Pop it in feed and then then you've got the icon as well. Yeah. Okay. Not too shabby. I think if I sit down and crack on it. Also, I've added for Plock, the podcast sorter, I have got a very rudimentary template system, which I'm quite fond of.
Yeah, Plock's looking really cool. People should go and have a look at Plock. I think that could be just statically generating a podcast, a feed for your podcast. It's really cool.
So if you go to freebooters.uk, the front page of the website, at the moment I've taken out all CSS. I want to rebuild the CSS right from the ground up. But at the moment, it's just default styling. Now, we were talking about the idea of just having links to the MP3 files for a bit more minimalism.
Mm.
And I really quite like that, to be honest.
That will be an option in what, yes. I assume, whether you can MP3, yeah.
You can have the player, you can have it above, below descriptions. You basically, what you do, a template file is just an HTML file of the what's between the link tags. So basically, you know, you can put your enclosure in and then you just put in the variables straight from bash. So it's dollar title, dollar description, dollar enclosure or something like that, which I think I want to maybe possibly do it in a more stylish way rather than just do it in a bash way. So maybe do...
So you have a little template file that you pull from or something like that.
And then do maybe like double brackets title, double brackets description or something like that, just to make it feel a little bit more like a proper thing. That's just... At the time I was thinking of doing that, I wanted to minimize the amount of lines I was putting in the script to stop me from getting lost. You know, sometimes when you work on stuff and you just expand it upwards a lot,
this is genuinely really cool. I think Plock is genuinely really fucking cool and would be useful to a lot of people.
I'm really happy with it. But also, if you go to Space Virgins, which is on Freeboot, you can click on Space Virgins. So I've got an audio feed of Space Virgins, and that's got the enclosure and the descriptions in it and the... and the tags are title tags, so it looks more like what it used to. Again, zero styling. I'm still trying to work out the aesthetic, whether or not the Space Virgins aesthetic should be derived from the same style sheet as Freebooters, or whether or not... I considered the other day getting Space Virgins its own domain, which is kind of...
That'd be cool.
But since we all hang out in the Freebooters group, you know, then I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, also, did I update the flat? Oh, I updated the flat out leaderboard times as well, the little script, to something a lot simpler that gets automatically like pulled. So, shamefully, of course, you're still on GitLab, if I remember correctly. and you've got the flat out times there, right? That's because that's where.
Yeah.
And that, because that's where it's pulling from. Yeah. It just every.
That's where you're pulling from.
Yeah. Every, I think it's every day or every hour or something. There's a systemd service that pulls down. I wish there was an easier way in systemd of doing a time service instead of having to do two files. And I have to look it up.
See,
every
I don't
time
mind that. Wing hates that as well. I actually don't. I don't mind that. I don't mind that way.
I feel like I kind of want to do cron jobs or something.
Cron,
but
you can just do cron. Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like that's. I don't know. That doesn't feel like the right way to me.
Well, if it's a Debian based thing and you use cron, it's using systemd in the background anyway. The actual cron daemon doesn't do any. It just creates a systemd timer.
Yeah. Well, So I just.
So you can think of cron as an interface to systemd now.
Well, so it pulls. It just pulls down the text straight down from the GitLab repository. GitLab. And just splats it on the screen. It doesn't have a fancy table or anything like that. It just does it in pre-formatted text.
When I saw that, I like that, because why bother with a table when it's already formatted? Like, it would gain you nothing.
Yeah. And then it gives you the source as well. So I that's fine. I can't, why did I do it? I wanted to simplify the process or something. Maybe I wanted to reduce my dependency on Pandoc, even though. Like Blop needs it, and doing anything like Blop without Pandoc is not what you want to do,
not
really, is
it? Yeah.
Because there's so many edge cases that Pandoc takes care of as well. Like, I've done my sed commands and everything, but oh, someone's put a table in. Shit, I've got to do a whole table sed command now. So Pandoc does it really well as well. Pandoc does, you know, it puts in sensible class, delimiters or specifiers or whatever the word is, so it makes styling it relatively easy as well. It gives you lots of control. I mean, Pandoc's amazing, really. It's a lovely piece of software.
It's really cool. Yeah, I wish it wasn't fucking Haskell. That's fine if use the bin version from the AUR, which gets around that problem. But
I quite enjoy the just having the episode list, and then because you can see more episodes at once. Do you need a description? Probably not. It comes if you're listening to it on your phone or podcast thing, podcast app. Then
I think
the description will come through.
Yeah, for descriptions, so I listen to some like heavy political podcasts,
mm-hmm.
and I want to know specifically what that episode is about.
Mm-hmm.
Like what region? Like I'm really, you know, at the moment I'm interested in stuff in Iran. Mm-hmm. I'm not as interested in whatever. So I pick and choose episodes based on mm-hmm. that. I want the description. Although, to be fair, that's in the title. So what I'm saying is moot. But I was going to say, like, for what we do, like, you can't really encapsulate this rambling fucking nonsense with a description anyway. It is what it is every time. Like,
oh, you know. Yeah. If you look at the Space Verge's descriptions, this one is, Drew rated Crank 7 out of 10. Even more surprisingly, he gave Crank High Voltage 8 out of 10. The Space Virgins investigate. That's actually a pretty good description. That's
a good description, yeah. Yeah.
For Psycho Gorman, after unearthing a gem that controls an evil monster looking to destroy the universe, a young girl and her brother use it to make him do their bidding. I feel I probably copy and pasted that from somewhere. that feels like an IMDb description.
It does.
The Space Virgins are back on the menu, boys. See, I'm not using AI to do the video descriptions, -Chris.
I did see that one, yeah. That made me laugh, yeah.
But the trouble is with taking the metadata from the description and putting it into a website is that in metadata descriptions, you've got like a plain text format. So it's new line for like a paragraph and stuff.
Yeah. Right.
So what I've done in Plock so far is replace new line with the BR tag, line break.
Yeah.
There are, I did think of more convoluted ways of replacing BR with a paragraph delimiter and all this kind of stuff.
I've been in that exact situation and it's not worth it. BR's fine.
Yeah. Well, also as well, is sometimes if you want to list a bunch of links, which is often the case in Bash, you just do new line, new link, new line, new link, new line. Like then you've got to delimitate, okay, that's a new line, not a paragraph. And it's like, Or is it just going to be a shitload of paragraphs of spacing and stuff that doesn't look good? Yeah, no, it's the one I've landed on, to be honest.
I think that's the right approach with that. Yeah.
At least it looks consistent with what's going to be in the metadata description, the RSS feed, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So
On that note, shall we get our div on?
Yeah, let's get our div on. Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you for listening, everybody, and or watching. What did I do with the OBS window? Okay, brilliant. All right. Ta-da!